Hi, welcome to PMA Talks Tech, the podcast for fresh produce professionals that explores the people, companies, and technology solutions that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector. So I can attest it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world. So thanks for joining us and allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. We have two guests today. Shay Myers is a third-generation producer in Oregon and Idaho, and Michael Helmstetter is from TechXL, an investment group. Shay is going to talk to us about the current issues he's facing with supply chain disruption on the ground. Michael discusses, from an investor point of view, what problems and solutions he's seeing now. So let's get started. We've got Shay Myers on the air, and he's a third generation farmer in Oregon and Idaho who's had a big impact from the COVID-19 pandemic and has mostly sold into food service. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your operation?
Sure. So you kind of summed it up. I'm a third generation farm kid. Been around the operations my entire life, left for a few years, and somehow ended up back here. I'm not sure exactly how that all happened, other than I had a really huge appreciation for my grandfather and kind of what he had started. And at that point in time, didn't look like anyone was going to come back. And that seemed like a bad thing to me. Also, I've got a lot of farmers in my family. But not a lot of marketers, not a lot of people that look at the business through a marketer's eyes. And I've always enjoyed that side of the business. And there was an opening for me to come back and to help sell and market our asparagus and onions. Now we got sweet potatoes and a few other things in the works. And so the family saw that I kind of had the skill set, and they took the risk on me and let me make a bunch of mistakes. And almost a decade and a half later, here I am.
That's great. Well, I didn't know that about your background in marketing, but that's really shown through in the great coverage that you've gotten in the last month or so, and really became the face in some places of some of the problems that growers are having right now due to the supply chain disruption from COVID-19. So can you explain a little bit about what's happening on your farm and why that's happening?
Sure. I'm going to speak specific to onions right now, because that's where the impact is being most significant, will have the most significant impact. And because it's a low margin, high volume commodity as well. With the closure of the restaurants, so we typically are 70-30 to 60-40, and that's food service to retail. And so that supply chain is established. It's something that we've built, and that's what our plantings are based on. That's what our sales are based on. That's what our packing line and equipment is based on. That's what our refrigeration and storage is based on, is what that historical data and that historicity has taught us over all of these years. And it's all out the window, right? The restaurants with the closure, and I mean, some will argue that the restaurants aren't closed. I think if you talk to most restaurant owners, they will say that they're closed.
Yeah.
We certainly feel in our industry as if they are closed. And with those closures, we have lost, you know, that 60 or 70% of our business almost completely. It's gone virtually to zero. There's a small amount shipping, but I mean, what we would normally ship in 1 week has taken us 6 weeks to sell of the restaurant type of onion, which is a larger size profile, larger pack onion than what would go to retail. The ramifications of that are, it's the end of our storage season. We have the capacity for refrigeration, but it doesn't really matter. We've got a crop that you can store for 7 or 8 months. We're at the end of those 7 or 8 months. And so that, it's kind of like milk. You can put it in the refrigerator, but once it's expired, it's still expired. And you might get an extra 10 days. You might get an extra 7 days on that milk, but essentially you're past that expiration date. And that's where the onions are today in the Northwest. And so a lot of those are getting thrown away by millions and millions of pounds. And that cycle, frankly, will continue. I'm in California with one of our grower partners here now, and that cycle will continue here in California as well.
Because they'll just be old enough that it's just time for them to go and there's no place for them to go right now.
Right. And then here they don't store, but it's 105 degrees today. And once the canopy is down, there's a certain amount of time until you can harvest and sell that crop. So if you're only selling 40, 50% of the norm, the other 40, 50% is going to get plowed back into the ground.
Well, there's been some talk that I've heard and about people say to you, well, why don't you just give this away? Why don't you just give it to the food banks? And I've heard you give a very good answer to that. So why don't you let our listeners know kind of some of the complexities around that?
Sure. There's a multitude of reasons. But the most significant one is simply the fact that these onions right now, whether it's here in California or there in the Northwest, are not packaged yet. And there's an additional cost of roughly $3 to $4 per unit of sale to convert those into something that you can sell. So, and that's one additional cost that you have to incur. And then you also have to freight the product to the destination. So essentially, instead of losing $3 to $4 per 50-pound bag, instead of losing $4,000 or $5,000 an acre, if you were to donate that with zero financial support, you're going to triple that number. And so you hemorrhage that much faster. And we're already losing, so it's a really, really easy decision to make. Yeah. On many levels.
Yeah, that's tough. I've also heard now that a lot of the food banks are full, so you wouldn't, even if you're willing to take that hit, you know, there's no place for it to go right now.
No, and that has been the case. The food banks, as of about the last 10 days to 2 weeks, have started to open up. They really do need product, and they are willing to, in some cases, we shipped the load out yesterday that went to a food bank. They covered the freight. And
they also
paid our packing costs. They didn't pay anything for the onion towards the growing costs whatsoever, but they paid our packing costs on our freight. We loaded the truck and sent it to Portland yesterday.
That's great. So what do you do now? How do you move forward as a producer? What do you think about next year? Or can you even think about next year yet? But kind of what happens now?
Yeah. So we've already made our bed for the 2020 season, because the onions are planted in March and April. So when this was barely beginning, we were already in our planting process. So we essentially have made zero changes from a plantings, from an acreage standpoint or from a volume standpoint. That wasn't really by choice or by strategy. It was by circumstance. And so unlike the wet veg guys or the leafy greens, they're on a, 60 day to 90 day cycle. They can make some corrections. We are going to deal with the ramifications of oversupply on an unprecedented level this fall. Like what we have wasted in the 2019 crop is nothing compared to what will likely be wasted in the 2020 crop. It's a lot like what we're seeing with in the protein industry right now, in the meat industry. Their losses are just beginning and they're going to be massive, right? They weren't felt before now, but now that ball's rolling, it's just going to be worse and worse and worse. And that's what we're going to see. I mean, if we lost probably 10 to 15% of our entire onion crop in the Northwest, that number will probably be double or triple that, I would guess, for the 2020 season, for what we harvest this fall.
Oh my gosh. Well, I know you're really busy and you have to get back to many fires to put out. So I have one more kind of question for you that fits in with what you're talking about. So what systemic things should happen external to your farm, like outside of what you can do that can help your business and get the supply chain working again? What is there any call to action or anything that you would suggest that an external force could help you?
Yeah, I mean, I've alluded to this in some of the videos and some of the conversations that I've tried to have online and through the media. And that is, there's really two things that we can do. Number one, we really do need to figure out how we're going to turn the economy back on and as quickly. And obviously safety is a priority for all of us, but we also have to think of the long-term ramifications. And some of these ramifications are just, especially for in agriculture, are just dauntingly massive. So I think that's number one. Like, we do need to say, okay, what's the risk from a health standpoint, but what's the risk economically? And to a supply chain as a food, you know, producing nation, how long can we hold off and what will the ramifications be? So let's turn the economy back on as soon as we feasibly can. Two, I keep mentioning this, I feel like, if I could make any request, and I've said this before this event happened, but hopefully the consumer, when they're at the grocery store, is thinking a little bit more consciously about where their food is coming from.
Those are really great points. And I certainly see consumers paying a lot more attention now and for the first time really thinking about, now that I may not be getting my food, you know, where is it coming from? And I think people are paying a lot more attention. So I really appreciate that point of view of supporting our growers. So with that, I am going to let you get back to work. And I really appreciate your time and your thoughts and your production. And my daughter has asked me once, she's grown, but she moved away from home. And she said, I just realized that not everybody starts every meal with an onion. So I support you.
Well, I'm glad you do. And I'm glad that's a tradition in your family. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share and to talk about what the industry's facing and what we as Americans are facing. And I hope that all of us are mindful of that and that we can make a small change, if not a more significant one.
Great, great. Thank you so much, Shay.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye. I really appreciate it.
We just talked to Shay Myers. He's a West Coast producer, about the issues that he's facing in the supply chain and how he's solving them. We're so grateful for people like Shay that are still producing our food and getting our food transported at this time. But now we want to hear from a different lens, from someone that doesn't have to be out in the field every day harvesting food and has the luxury of looking through a longer lens of this situation of what's happening around the supply chain and also looking into the future and what this is going to bring. Who I have with me is Michael Helmstetter, and he's the CEO of TechXL. And I'm really happy to have you with us today, Michael.
It's great to be here, Vani. Thanks for having me.
Great. So if you could talk a little bit, you know, we've got Shay's view of what's happening, literally boots on the ground. If you could talk a little bit about just what you're seeing, what's happening now around supply chain and food supply, that'd be helpful.
Sure. You know, I'll maybe make a comment about, you know, what Shay's going through. And I think everybody can kind of put it in perspective as he's a farmer of a lot of different crops, but one of his major crops is onions. And you know, restaurants and food service are obviously the major consumer of his onions. And those are, the majority of them are shut down or slowly coming back to life as things open up. But you think about it, we don't do a lot at home with onions. We do cook them with them, but it's not really that sort of staple vegetable that's kind of sitting in our fridge. So that's, you know, a perfect example of how a farmer can get hurt, because it's not really focused on the direct consumer, but they're focused on us getting somewhere and eating those onions in those restaurants and such. And so, you know, I feel for him and the impact that he's going through. You know, so I'm seeing, you know, kind of two pieces to what's going on today. There's sort of the, you know, the social side of things, the food safety side of things and concerns. And then that second piece of the sustainability of the food systems. And we were watching the tussle right now as to whether the Tyson plants are going to be closed or open, you know, from the poultry side of things. I mean, prior to sort of this push from the administration in Washington, you know, something like 20 plants were being shut down between Tyson and Cargill and Smithfield. I mean, major number of plants being shut down. You know, the president's, you know, pulling the Defense Production Act and trying to get them up and running to continue to kind of maintain that food system side of things. But it's a, you know, I don't think the general consumer realizes that when you produce a hog for food or you produce a broiler chicken for food, you cannot maintain them for very long after they're at a stage where you would normally put them into the production pipeline. And so, you know, the number of those kinds of food animals or milk, you know, dairy farmers are saying, you know, something like 4 million gallons of milk are being dumped down the drain a day because they're not being consumed. So that's really, you know, that sustainability sort of the food system and that balance of, you know, wasting food versus getting it into the supply chain and making sure the consumer side of things are there, I think is really important. And I think, you know, it's not just that processor side of things. I mean, you think about the folks that are supplying the grain, the feed to feed those hogs and feed those chickens, and now the orders of those things aren't being placed. It really has that kind of effect downstream. And then I think ultimately, you know, consumers start getting hit with higher prices and you know, empty shelves and those kinds of things that really stress sort of our system, the societal system. I will make a comment. So that's, for me, that's kind of what you're seeing is this really push pull on, you know, safe food, people worried about contaminated food, but also having enough food, you know, sustainability of the food system, you know, to satisfy our expectations, because, you know, U.S. consumers are not going to not have food. That's, you know, our country will not be in that situation, but we're very used to having a glut of food and we're not seeing that. And I don't think people realize that sort of chain back to Shea and back to farmers and ranchers who are getting grain, et cetera, and people that are normally storing it and now it's going to waste, realize a lot of that stuff's happening behind the scenes. I do think a lot of really good stories are coming out of this, Bonnie. You know, you see things like Publix down in the Southeast, the grocery store chain, you know, they're buying up tons of meat and dairy and donating it to those in need at various charities. Seaboard, our local, you know, one of their major products is pork. They've donated, I can't remember how many hundreds of thousands of servings of pork that normally would just, in the stage of the environment today, would be food waste. And so I think there is that positive of what this country's all about kind of occurring at the same time. But yeah, it's a tough time and it's a shock to our system and it's having an effect on a lot of people. And I don't think we've really seen the true impact of it yet. I think that's still to come.
And I think some of these trends and some of the frailness of our supply chain were starting to build up even before COVID. And so what do you see that this may be exacerbating that was already happening and solutions we were looking for anyway?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, the farmers are constantly working to, you know, maintain a, call it a resilient food supply chain. I mean, they're doing things all the time to get us clean, good, healthy food, and not so much always in the easiest environment. So yeah, there's a lot of things well before the COVID-19 issue and what we're seeing in food. There are things that were just, you know, sort of systemic and have existed for some time and are going to continue to exist, you know, in the future. And, you know, beyond things like declining wild fisheries and you know, biofuels competing for crops, there's maybe three or four that I think of all the time, you know, in our business, and the impacts they have. That, you know, to me, the most dramatic is, you know, is climate disasters and associated stress on crops. You know, that's just, agriculture requires weather, climate, water, all those kinds of good things, but we're seeing more and more extreme weather events, more powerful storms, you know, greater droughts, sometimes back to back. We saw that in the Midwest last year where you just had massive rainfall that, you know, dumped water on these crops, just destroying acres and acres and acres of crops or delaying plantings. And then months later, that's followed by a massive heat wave drought. And so trying to tackle those kinds of stresses at sort of the farm level is not particularly easy. And again, in the Midwest last year, we really saw, you know, the impact of that. And, you know, it doesn't just destroy crops. It's lowers, obviously, production volume. You end up with food shortages, prices go up. It, you know, as you and I have talked before, it disrupts supply chains in a significant way. And then you end up with spoilage, you know, because of the fact that you've got sort of this chain of events that you often have spoilage in large storage facilities. So you know, I think that natural disaster and that enhancement in the frequency increasing in those disasters and that climate is, to me, is kind of top of mind of one of those things that's behind the scenes. Another one's biosecurity. You know, your listeners may not be totally familiar with that, but that's really about, you know, keeping diseases, keeping pathogens, bacteria, funguses, viruses, parasites away from crops, food, people, all those kinds of things. And so again, behind the scenes, you know, biosecurity is a major, you know, aspect of a farmer's life. They've got to take measures to vaccinate animals. You know, they've got to produce fresh feed for their animals, dispose of waste properly, all those kinds of things. And, you know, we've been pretty lucky as a society that we go to the grocery store and kind of take it for granted that our fruit looks good It's usually not contaminated. Occasionally we have a contamination event in this country, but we tend to have things that are, you know, not well grown, protected, you know, modern tools are used to fight pests and those kinds of things. But a slip up, a change in climate, a movement in a certain direction can cause massive disruption. Last year, African swine fever hit China, and they lost 50% of their pork herd, of their hogs. And that's 30% of the world supply. And that's a single disease that occurred. And I think, you know, right now, one of the reasons to talk about biosecurity is it's exactly what all of us are dealing with at home right now. The fact that we're doing social isolation, we're washing our hands, we're keeping our 6 feet, that's biosecurity for us as people. And that's a major challenge down at the, you know, at the farm and the rancher level, to make sure that your crops are virus free, to make sure that your animals are disease free. It's just a really sophisticated ongoing battle that requires innovation and it requires cost and it requires the farmers to really kind of implement that kind of change. So that's a second one that's big. And then, two more that, you know, are just kind of behind the scenes is, you know, vector-borne diseases. So just like with the biosecurity, you've got diseases that are brought in by vectors like mosquitoes and ticks and fleas and lice and those kinds of things. Again, they have to be protected against. And if there is an impact at that rancher, at that farm level, it can be absolutely devastating. And so again, farmers have to be in a situation where they're protecting. And if they don't have the budgets to do it, if the innovation isn't there to have the vaccine or have the treatment yet, all those things can add up to real significant issues in the production and supply chain of you know, kind of what we take for granted in the stores. And then the last one is sort of the social pressure, the consumer preference side of things, the anti-GMOs, the traceability. I want longer shelf life. I don't want to eat a brown piece of fruit. Keeping pricing logical. So you're trying to do all of those other things I listed earlier and provide, you know, this perfect product at the right price point, you know, for society, because society is growing increasingly worried about this whole food security. There's almost a food insecurity these days that people want to know the traceability of where did this come from? I want to see how it made its way through the system. So I know pesticides weren't on it, or I know it wasn't touched a certain way, or I know it's not a genetically modified crop, you know. So they have that side of things, and then they have that sort of expectation of a perfect product on the shelf when they go to the grocery store, and that nutritious food and all the things they're looking for. So that would be four that really, you know, they were there before COVID-19. They're going to be there after COVID-19, and the financial challenges of COVID-19 on farmers are just going to put more stress on their ability to be able to mitigate these kinds of things and be able to satisfy consumers at the same time.
Yeah, I think all those things are really true. And I think COVID has really exacerbated a lot of these issues. And like you said, really put the pressure on. What I'm trying to do with this podcast, and you know, there's always plenty of problems to talk about, but is to really shine a light on what are the issues that producers are facing, which we've done, and then look at what are some of the solutions that are coming that we can kind of have either a silver lining, you know, maybe we found some solutions that we wouldn't have looked for because of COVID, but that there are a lot of really smart people out there continuing to look for solutions to some of these issues. And I think you're with TechXL in a great position to see a lot of the solutions that are starting to come along. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Sure. Yes. And, you know, as you said, that's what TechXL is all about, is really kind of identifying that next generation of innovation that can really have a positive impact on all of these food, crop, animal, and even companion animal challenges, and find those early. So we're willing to take really high risk on very early discovery-based technology and work at getting those to the marketplace to consumers as fast as we can. So we do, Bonnie, as you said, we see thousands of technologies every year. We have what we refer to as a very significant deal flow pipeline, and really see some innovative and creative things that, you know, we feel and we invest in are going to be able to address some of these kinds of challenges and such. So, you know, some of the areas, so I talked about, you know, this sort of perfect product in the grocery store. And I think one of the most significant emerging areas right now is sort of that food waste reduction side of things and trying to ensure that we, you know, we have a longer shelf life associated with fruit. We have, you know, much less waste that occurs. And so there's a lot of companies that are sort of emerging with technologies that are coatings or an additive to a shipping box to be able to really drastically slow ripening and spoilage in foods and kind of have that increased lifespan on the shelf. You know, one example company is Appeal. They've actually come up with an edible coating that's a bunch of natural materials that they've figured out how to kind of put this powder over a vegetable or a crop and be able to provide that barrier that really, you know, their numbers are it doubles the lifespan without refrigeration, which is obviously really significant. There's another company similar to Appeal called Mori, where they actually are using silk-based coating, so natural silk. And again, they, you know, they look at water evaporation, they look at cell respiration, all these things that occur within the crops that they're dealing with. And again, their focus is on really slowing ripening and the spoilage of those products. So there's a number of companies that are really trying to figure out, you know, that post-harvest side of things, that when we get these apples, when we get these pears, how do we maintain them in an environment when they end up on the shelf that they look like what the consumer expects, but to be able to do that at a longer period of time to have more shelf life where they're not becoming, you know, waste in the grocery store. So that's a big area we're focused on. And I think a lot of great companies are out there, and there's, you know, dozens that I could talk about. Another one that is probably our greatest focus of sort of effort is in, you know, the crop breeding and genetics. So developing crops that will be resistant or resilient to the kind of things that I talked about earlier. And our focus is on not genetically modified organisms, not that we're opposed to investing in those because I think they're important, but we really focus on what's called gene editing. And I know that's something you're extremely familiar with in your background and some of the discoveries you've had in that area, where you're not dealing with a genetically modified crop, but you're starting to do just sort of fundamental gene editing within that crop species itself. And so we've invested in a number of companies. One of them is called Epicrop, which they have what's called an epigenetics platform. It's instead of sort of going in and dealing with genes inside the crop, you're actually changing the way they express themselves, how the genes sort of talk to what they want to do. And so we're working with them on canola, on berries. They're very focused on soy and tomatoes. And it's just another way to produce, you know, a more resilient crop, higher crop amount. So per sort of unit seed, you get more biomass on the back end, so more crop that's there and more value that's there, and doing it in a non-GMO sort of way. There's another company in California that I know you know, that Sound Agriculture, that's relatively new, that we recently invested in, and they're focused in that epigenetics area as well, and so we're working with them on that. But they've also got some other sort of sprayable in-the-field crops on seeds and others that give real protection to those seeds and also enhance sort of that germination life of the plant. So there's a number of companies. Benson Hill's another one we're invested in that's very focused on corn and moving in some other areas. So lots of companies that are trying to figure out, you know, these farmers are dealing with drought, these farmers are dealing with viruses, they're dealing with all these other things. How can we give them seeds for their crops that when those plants mature, they're resistant to that drought, they're resistant to the excess water, they're resistant to the viruses, all of those pieces that can be there just by creating a better and stronger seed. And then, you know, a third area I think is really important is this sort of indoor farming, because again, I'm not trying to say that's great in terms of directly competing with the natural, you know, traditional farmer out on the field. But you've just got a lot that's going on indoor that just really allows you to use less water, you know, not use pesticides. It's not genetically modified. You know, you have really, really superior food safety because you're in this controlled environment. less environmental impact because, again, you have this internal indoor controlled environment. So a lot of people probably that are listening to this podcast are familiar with Plenty, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, indoor vertical farmer. There's Arrow Farms is another big one that's out there that, you know, they've gone to not only these controlled indoor environments, but they've gone to robotics where they can have robots that go around and get evaluations of good plants, bad plants, make sure everything's going the way it's supposed to be going. So it's very automated as well. And that can tend to kind of drive the back end price of sort of this perfect indoor crop down to something that can be, you know, accepted by the consumer. So those are probably three areas where, you know, we're thinking about things. And again, our biggest focus really is on that plant trait improvement, that ability to produce more resilient and robust plants that can deal with some of these things that just aren't going to go away. The diseases will not go away. The climate change, you know, challenges and the disasters are not going to go away. So the only real, you know, outcome of that is that you've got to develop, you know, some crops that can be more tolerant and some animals that can be more tolerant to some of these diseases as well.
Great. Thanks, Michael. I mean, that's a great overview of many of the topic areas that I love and I'm interested in and I think are going to really bring some great solutions to producers. And if we can just get out of this COVID situation and talk about other technologies, I'll be really excited. But I want to thank you for your time today and your insights. I'm excited to continue to look forward in the breeding area and the indoor ag and a lot of the post-harvest work that you talked about. Those are all areas that we at PMA continue to look at and that are really going to be important to our growers pulling out of this. So again, thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Great, Vonnie. Thanks for having me, and for everybody out there listening to this, please stay safe and well and healthy and be smart about this disease as we march our way through. Good talking with you.
That's it for this episode of PMA Talks Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all of our episodes along with other important content at pma.com. Till then, stay safe and we'll see you next time.